That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 360, sportsnet.ca/590, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good afternoon. It is Brady and Walker. Welcome to our 1 o'clock hour. Thanks for finding us. So tonight, the Raptors are in Washington. Game 3, down 2-0 in this series. I don't know about you, but I'm fired up. Technically, it's not an elimination game, but in reality, absolutely, it's an elimination game. Lose tonight, this series is over by the time we hit the air on Monday. It'll be a sweep. You don't have to be a glass half-empty guy to think that. Win. And this is a whole new ball game. I know there's a lot of people that look at NBA history and say, hey, it's impossible. 2-0. Series is already over. You have to admit it's unlikely. And I do. Hey, that's just math. But nothing is over at 2-0, especially a 4-5 matchup. If you think that, you just don't understand the unpredictable nature of sports. All that said, it comes down to tonight for the Raptors. So I saw this quote the other day, and it stuck with me. It's from J.J. Watt. It reads, success isn't owned, it's leased, and rent is due every day. Rent is due.
This is Brady and Walker. Online at sportsnet.ca/590. On TV at Sportsnet 360. And on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Got something to say? Say it on Twitter at Brady and Walker. Or text 590-590. Now here are Greg Brady and Andrew Walker.
So rent is due every day for the Toronto Raptors. That means tonight. I'm not saying they have to win, Greg, a couple of playoff rounds or they have to win this series, but they better win tonight. They better not embarrass anybody by getting down 3-0. Like, Kyle Lowry has 13 points and 10 fouls in this series.
I don't watch basketball. Is that good?
Not very good.
Oh, okay.
Rent's due. Kyle Lowry's rent is due. Lou Williams, 16% from three-point land through two games. Lou Williams' rent's due tonight.
I hated paying rent. Did you hate paying rent? Did you ever not pay rent and then they knock and they say, where's the rent? Like, it literally is like those movies.
If you don't pay rent, you get evicted.
Terrence Ross,
a first-round pick, right? It's not time to shrink to the background here, right? I'm not saying Terrence Ross has taken over the series, but no more second fiddle. Terrence Ross's rent is finally due, and it's due tonight.
It's due tonight. Our number is 416-870-0590, *590. We're going to kick off with some Raptors. Lots of Raptors all day long on the show on Brady and Walker. You can tweet at us at Brady and Walker. And, of course, on Twitter, Fan590Walker, BradyFan590. You can call us also, 416-870-0590. The Raps are 4.5-point underdogs tonight. They're still 5-1 to win the series. We ask out of the gate, and we'll ask each other because we're dying to talk about it, is tonight a huge game in this franchise's 20-year history. We know what'll get said after this series. If the likely outcome comes, they have not ever won a 7-game series in 2 decades. That's, I you know, with all deference to many of the great players, some of the great coaches, that's hard to do on purpose. But I don't think we're there yet. I don't see tonight as it's crucially important to keep the series alive. This series probably ends Sunday. It almost always ends Sunday with home teams sweeping out teams up 3-0 on their own floor in the fourth game. Where sometimes you don't have that happen is when you're 3-0 on the road and you ease up a little bit and, hey, you know,
sure,
let's try that shot.
too many cigars packed in the bottom.
Yeah,
of the
yeah. Let's stretch out that steak dinner a little bit the night before the game, just a touch at Morton's. And then we can have a big gate come in. Like, don't you think those Miami LeBron teams, Jordan Bulls teams, Shaq, Kobe Lakers teams were like, hey, Dr. Buss might like to have game 5 at home. Oh, well, you know, because they know in the first round at the very least. This is a little bit different story. I think the best you hope for is setting yourself up. If they win tonight, I don't want to say Sunday's irrelevant, but I have very little expectation they'll win on Sunday. All you ask at this point is the split. Let's go in with moderately high expectations. Let's not ask for the moon here and say win them both and come back and make it a 2 out of 3. Sure, that'd be awesome. But if you have a home game and you're down 1-3, all you want to do is win it and put the pressure back on. Go and play with house money. Go play at their place next Friday night, a week from tonight in Game 6 at the Verizon Center, and make them beat you. That's all you can do.
Let's be honest. If you win Game 3, you want Game 4, obviously. But it all does come down to tonight. You're right. If they lose tonight and get down 3-0, don't even bother coming back for Game 5. That's how this works. Washington will finish the sweep. We'll come on the air Monday, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's been a lousy two games. Game 1 wasn't good for anybody, even the Wizards. Hey, John Wall, Brad Beal, great in Game 2. They were no good in Game 1. They played great in Game 2. The Toronto Raptors didn't. All that said, like 3-0, a series is over. For sure it's over. I didn't want to come in here today on the eve of a playoff game in Washington, something we've waited all year for.
All year.
The city's waited all year.
It took forever to get here.
And the whole show being, well, who are the Raptors going to fire? You're not there yet. You're not there yet. Is it unlikely? Sure. But if something is over at 2-0, you haven't been paying attention to what sports is, right?
Who needs a great game tonight? There are needs and there are wants. You can want someone to have a great game. Like need is very strange, right? If you're a sales guy, do you need to meet your quota to be the top sales guy or woman? Sure you do. Do you need, if you're a new TV show, you know how many new TV shows get canceled after their first year? 42%. That's incredible. 42% of shows don't get a second season. You need to have good ratings. Your boss will say, have good ratings, TV show, or you will pull the plug on you. Which Raptor needs to have? I mean, there's contract guys that may not be here. There's also Raptors that you expect to be back. But for reputation, for contract, whatever, pick one player.
Hey, I mean, what did I throw out there? You can use it. You tell us. Hashtag rent's due. Kyle Lowry's rent is due tonight. I know he might be banged up. I don't know to what extent. Maybe it's worse than we think, and maybe this is unfair to him. Kyle Lowry is, whether DeRozan's their best player or not, Kyle Lowry is the engine that drives this team, right? He's supposed to be that heart and soul. He's been non-existent in two games. And existent because he fouled out of Game 1 and got in foul trouble again in Game 2, which was the turning point. As soon as he left and Grievous Vasquez comes in, then James Johnson comes in, that game was over.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Kyle Lowry needs to have a game tonight.
It's really difficult because my inclination is to say Valanciunas, and at the same time, I look and I go, he's signed next year. Now, what a good finish to the series can do for him is he could potentially say he's signed for one more year, and then they hold the qualifying offer on him. A good finish, he could maybe go with his agent to Masai Ujiri in the summer and go, how about a little something for the effort here? If he doesn't have it, he can't. The center's dying in the NBA. I'm convinced
sure,
of it. I'm
sure.
Watching.
Well, it's at least the time of the league where we're at.
I'm watching, like, even the Joel Embiid stuff last year, who has just been an utter disaster. There's only so many times. Like, we're getting to the point where it's like running backs in the NFL. You don't even think about taking a big man in the top five, and you wouldn't even think about taking a running back in the top 10 anymore. 416-870-0590. Joe Siddle's going to join us to talk Blue Jays. That's a happy part of the equation. They're in Tampa tonight. Ari Dickey, Drew Smiley, the former Tiger, makes his first start tonight for the Rays this season, that is. He went in the David Price deal, but he's been on the DL start of the season. We'll talk lots of baseball, lots of hockey, and the Edmonton News Conference comes up at 3 o'clock. We'll talk about it. We're not airing it, but we'll talk about it on our show after 3. Vic and Milton, you're on with Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan on the day of Game 3 in D.C. tonight. Go ahead, Vic.
Hey, listen, guys, let me be the last to welcome you guys to this time slot.
Thank you.
I miss you guys in the morning, but, you know, it's just as good in the afternoon.
Why? Well, then sleep in like we are. Just sleep until like 8:16.
You change your
job.
You
don't have to get up. Change your job also.
Well, you know what? I might consider that. Here's the thing, guys. I agree with you. I agree with J.C. Watts. Or is it J.J. Watts? Ain't nothing going on.
J.C. Watts is the congressman who was the great Ottawa Senators Ottawa Rough Riders quarterback. I love that guy. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, well, really, I mean, rent is due from all of them. But here's the thing, guys. I want you to consider this. Regardless of what happens, let's imagine that they miraculously come back and win, say, the next four games. I look at this team, and even for me, no matter what happens, this is not the team going forward. Somebody mentioned a couple of nights back that you look at DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, they're more like a number two and a number three option. This team needs to be remade a little bit anyway. So this last two games, the last 2 months, made me realize that, you know what, they may have looked good at 24-7, but that wasn't a real deal.
Let me ask you, Vic. I'm fascinated to know, and then I want to ask Andrew. If I told you, and I don't think they can do it because he's probably going back home to Texas. If I told you this team just could add LaMarcus Aldridge in the offseason, and then your core is Aldridge, DeRozan, and Lowry, they're much, much better than they are right now. Like, it just is going to take that one player to say yes, not to the dress, but to Toronto, right? Isn't that all they need?
You are absolutely right. That is all they need. And that's what Paul Pierce was talking about, that it factor.
Yeah.
You need three superstars, but you need one main guy. And I, for one, would contribute to his salary. Thanks, gentlemen.
Well, you're going to have to keep working then. We shouldn't have told you to quit your job. Like we were talking about the other day, the only two free agents out there, and a lot of teams are going to hold cap space for 16. There's a lot of big names coming out. Durant, West, there's a lot of... But everyone's going to have more cap space because of the CBA. If I told you you could add Aldridge, if I told you could add Marc Gasol, you have to sell them on. And I really hoped that this team would go far, Andrew, maybe even to the conference finals. And then you got a great sale here. You go to Marc Gasol. Hey, you'll love the city. We already know that. You can play here. And I sorry if that hurts JV's feelings. That's how it goes. Sometimes you got to upgrade things.
Winning solves a lot of things. And that's for bad markets, right? That's for the Clevelands and the Detroits of the world.
Yeah.
Toronto's a good, you know, people complain all the time about the spotlight of you know, that's cast and the shadow that's cast with the hockey team in this town. It's a good NBA city, right? It's a melting pot. It doesn't come with that pressure. If anything, you blend into the background because the Blue Jays and the Toronto Maple Leafs sometimes have the pressure. So is tonight, you asked the question, is tonight a critical moment for the organization? I mean, it is and it isn't. You can lose tonight and then you lose on Sunday. And make no mistake, if they lose tonight, they're losing on Sunday. And yeah. I mean, it's not the end of the world. I think we all like Masai Ujiri. They are still a young team. Maybe they're still trending in a good-ish direction. But any time that you're going to change direction a little bit or let certain people go, Dwayne Casey's not surviving a sweep. I'm sorry. I like Dwayne Casey. He's not surviving a sweep. So it is a very important moment. Maybe not for the life and death of the franchise, but certainly which direction they go a year from now.
Tonight's probably confirmation that we did overestimate them, and they maybe even overestimated themselves. Like, I look at two losses, losing to Vince in New Jersey. In that game six, they lost by a point, to recall it, and they would have had game seven at home against New Jersey. They started that series sloppily, got it back to 3-1, but then had a chance to win two straight and force a game seven at home. And then the Pistons lost in 0-2 in the first round after coming back. Now, they would have had to come back from 2-0 down. We're going to talk to Jerome Williams, who was on that Detroit team that beat Toronto that night. That felt like the end of something also, because they were terrible for the next couple of years after that, and that was almost the end of Vince. One more on this. Rob in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Go ahead, Rob.
Hey, guys, how are you? I want to thank you guys for screwing up my mornings. It was perfect. I used to drive in and call you guys, and now I got to, you know, sneak out for lunch and call you. But anyway.
That's okay. We'll call you in the morning, wake you up. But like I said, we get up a lot later than we used to. It's awesome. I can't tell you how good it is. We're giddy. Okay.
I'm envious. But if there's any guy I love to just cut ties with, it's Hansbrough. I mean, every time I see him come on or start, I just want to fling my remote at the TV. It just drives me nuts. I don't know why.
He's barely played, though, and he didn't even play. I know what you mean, but is that because you thought he'd be more coming out of North Carolina? Is that because you thought he was better at Indiana? What is it?
It's just coming out of
Is he white?
Carolina.
Are you a racist? I don't know.
But you know what? I was very I had said before the series started that I didn't like the matchup, and losing these first two games, I don't like this. I think they're gonna go out in four straight, and if that happens, I can't see Casey surviving a sweep. That's for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Everybody's rent is due on this team. I don't think Tyler Hansbrough is the guy that stirs the drink here, but no one is escaping blame. Lou Williams, right? I mean, there's another example. They get this guy for John Salmons. It's an unbelievable trade by Masai Ujiri. All the guy has done is come here, come off the bench, score points, name the sixth man of the year in the entire NBA and rebuild his value heading into this offseason. Does he escape blame? A little bit. He's had a great year. But those first two games, maybe you forget but don't forgive, or forgive but don't forget. Tonight, you have to have some professional pride. This team is good enough to go into Washington and find a way to win a basketball game. They have that ability.
Like, you know what's so weird about Lou Williams is I was thinking about this the other day, is he's on an Atlanta team last year that's 38-44. But, like, do they look and go, oh, he would have made us that much better? Or do they go, sometimes square pegs don't fit into round holes, and he didn't fit here, and we couldn't have got him the time, and maybe we feel we're deeper than Toronto? But I'm still, again, I'm obsessed with Atlanta because I'm flabbergasted that they've done so well. I can't believe they've done so well. I'm talking myself into the Wizards beating them next round.
Hey, guys have good years and bad years, and good fits and bad fits. Here's a good fit here.
Yeah.
He was a great fit here. They didn't have a guy to come up. That, you know, if they have Lou Williams on, and for whatever reason, DeRozan and Valanciunas and Kyle Lowry were playing better at this time last year in the first round against Brooklyn. You put Lou Williams on that team coming off the bench, they win that series. And I know it was only a one basket difference anyway.
It only was, but I'll never forget a one-for-one trade, and this will mean probably nothing to you, maybe a little bit to our listeners. So Washington, the Wizards trade Richard Hamilton to Detroit for Jerry Stackhouse, and I'm on the air. And I just, you know what I like to say, you never trade your best player. Right? Is that not, do you ever agree?
Are you telling a story that you're going to be wrong again?
Or that I'll regret? Yeah. Jerry, so I'm like, I cannot figure out what's going on here. Why would you trade Jerry Stackhouse, who's an established player? And Richard Hamilton was 5 years younger. He became better. He was a little enigmatic coming out of college. A lot of guys are. It takes 4 years for a lot of guys to get what the NBA is all about. We're just getting there now with DeMar DeRozan.
Came in and won a title.
Like, imagine, and imagine the regret Washington felt. And Stackhouse is a very good player. But imagine if you flip DeMar DeRozan somewhere for a 30-year-old shooting guard right now. We'd tear the city apart. It'd be a huge mistake. Jays tonight, they're 3 in Tampa. They go 3 in Boston. They have 4 in Cleveland. And first sweep, we talked about this yesterday. They didn't sweep anybody as good as their May was. They had a little 2-game sweep against Philadelphia when Jay Happ came off the DL last year.
They didn't sweep anybody, and they didn't get swept.
Yeah.
That's what we talked about for a month and a half.
They didn't sweep anybody in May until the Oakland A's came in with the best record in baseball, and they swept the Oakland A's just after Victoria Day weekend, the weekend after, the long weekend here. And they get their first sweep over Baltimore. You referenced it yesterday, division play. 2 years ago, terrible. They've been terrible against the Yankees seemingly forever. They've been terrible against the Rays, the team they play tonight, forever. What a great start to get out 5-1 against the defending AL East champs, and they've done that.
We have yet to see the Boston Red Sox. I there's things to like about the Sox, and there's things you worry about a little bit. I still think, you know, apples to apples, the Baltimore Orioles, hey, they won the division last year, so until somebody beats them, I think this is their world. And the Blue Jays have taken 5 of 6 early on from Baltimore. And quite a few of those games in pretty dominant fashion. Last night was, they came back in the ninth, but it sure started well. Joe Siddle joins us from the radio broadcast. He will have the call tonight along with Jerry Howarth, Mike Wilner, as the Blue Jays visit Tampa, a spot where finally, late last year, they had some success. What do you make of the early matchup with Baltimore? People panic early in every city, I think, Joe, but if you are an Orioles fan, all of a sudden, we'll get Joe in a second, his line dropped for a second. But, I mean, Chris Tillman has been battered around twice by this team. Bud Norris, who had a better-than-expected year last year, he's been battered around by this team. They're pounding the ball in this series.
It's a positive in that their worst series so far has been the interleague series against the Braves, really. When you felt the worst when the series ended was probably Atlanta. Even the 3-4 against Tampa, I think you just saw little hiccups. Like we said, look at the guys that weren't hitting then. Jose Bautista wasn't hitting at all when they went down to Tropicana. Edwin still struggling, but he was struggling a lot more then. Joe Siddle rejoins us now. We mentioned R.A. Dickey goes against Drew Smyly tonight. They'll see Chris Archer, who dominated them on Sunday. Not sure who's going for Tampa tomorrow yet. Joe, thanks a lot for making time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. We were talking about the divisional play and how it was such a bugaboo for them in 13 after all the big trades. It moderately got better last year, and it wasn't the be-all and end-all of why they missed the playoffs, but out of the gate, 5-1 against Baltimore, 2-1 against the Yankees. The 9-7 record is almost, I don't want to say it's inconsequential, but they're going to play a ton of division games this year, and they need to prove they can play with these established teams, and they've done it so far.
Well, and even if you look at the whole first month, month and a half here, I think, what is it, like 28 of the first 35 games, I think, are against the ALE. So it's almost like this division's going to just be beating each other up for the first 6 weeks of the season. So far, so good. You know, I think there's good and bad so far. And you always hear the term, it's early. Well, at the same time, it's not a bad position for the Blue Jays to be in when they have a lot of their boppers really not doing a whole lot of damage just yet. And I mean Bautista and Encarnacion, of course, Russell Martin, not maybe in that category, but he hasn't really done much offensively either. So once these guys get going, and I think we can all safely say that they're going to, again, the offense to me is not a concern. I think this team is going to score runs. It's going to get down to pitching. And right now it's just been very iffy. The rotation's been good at times. We've seen some good performances, but we've also seen some that need to get a lot better. Like last night, Hutchinson was outstanding in the bullpen. It's had its good times too, but it's also had its failings. So it's been very inconsistent. And I think bottom line is you have to pitch. And if you don't pitch, you're not going to win this division. So I think the team that can finally do that, and Blue Jays got a lot of, there's still a lot of question marks as well as they've been doing at times. There's a lot of question marks, both in the rotation and in the bullpen.
Drew Hutchinson is such an interesting case, isn't he? I mean, we've seen him come through over the last calendar year with some of the best Blue Jays performances of anybody in the rotation. Last night was one of them. And we've seen him walk 5-6 guys and struggle already twice this season. So there's some inconsistency there. But last night, where he's dominant, I mean, had a perfect game going into the sixth, what's he doing in a start like that that's so successful?
Well, there's so many things that goes into a pitcher's delivery, and I think Drew would be the first one to tell you guys that he is very frustrated with those inconsistencies. He wants to be good every time out, and I think this is a big year for him, for the Blue Jays, because in the absence of Marcus Stroman, I think he's the one out of the three youngsters that really needs to step up. He's kind of got the quote, he's the veteran of that trio, I guess you could say, at 24 years old. But I think he was just far better last night. He's worked on different things in his delivery. A lot of times for a pitcher, I saw him smack his right hip a few times last night. And I said it on the broadcast. For me, it's the pitcher reminding himself to stay back a little bit, not to get too jumpy with that front side. When the pitcher gets out forward too quickly, that arm trails and they miss up in the zone. Well, he's able to ride that backside a little bit and get on top of the baseball, work downhill better. I thought what I saw mostly from Drew Hutchinson last night was a very live fastball. And I say that because just I watched the hitter swings, and there were several pitches in the zone. He pounded the zone aggressively with the strike zone last night, but I saw a lot of pitches that were hittable, and guys weren't really getting to him. And that tells me that's like, I don't care if it says 92 on the scoreboard or 94. Those are the pitches for me that appear as a hitter to be about 96, 98. They're just not getting to them. And that's a great thing. That hopefully that arm is fresh and ready to roll. And, you know, he had a little bit of that last year, that kind of dead arm, so to speak. But Drew looks strong right now, and hopefully this is maybe a good thing looking forward.
Boy, I was thinking the same thing. I was sitting on the first baseline last night, and the radar gun said 92, 93, at times 94 for Hutchinson. And some of those swings looked uncomfortable. They were late. Guys like Chris Davis struck out three times. A couple of, you know, just weak grounders the other way to Devin Travis at second. Whatever was going on, they couldn't time him one bit.
And I think that's a part of a pitcher having everything come together. And there's, as I said, there's so many little pieces that go into a pitcher's delivery, but you've got to get all those pieces to work together and in sync. And you talk about rhythm and timing. I know Drew talked about that a lot last year. There was times last year in his delivery that he would say from his windup, Pete Walker would time him from the time he began his delivery till the time he released the baseball. And at times it got too long. And it sounds like a really trivial thing, but if you don't have that rhythm and timing and you're taking too long throughout your delivery, then you're not going to get on time with that release point out front, and then you're going to create inconsistent deliveries. And again, there's so many things that go into this, and that's why pitching coaches break this stuff down on video and spend hours watching when they try to figure things out. But boy, last night, if you want to, you can take any one of those words, rhythm, timing, aggression, he was absolutely outstanding.
Joe Siddall joins us, of course. Jays, Rays, first of three. They'll go to Fenway first time this year, seeing the Red Sox for three, and then off to Cleveland to play the Tribe for four. Do you get a tingly sense about the Orioles and say it's not going to happen for them this year? I say that. Their starting ERA is the highest in the league. They were third in the American League and fifth in baseball last year. They look a little bit like how the Red Sox have had that flux, like really bad 14s and 12s where pitchers can't go deep and can't get anybody out. And Boston's 2011 and 2013 were fantastic. It's just the pitchers don't look the same.
Yeah, it appears that way right now. But, you know, again, it is still the end of April, and I would not count out the Baltimore Orioles or the Yankees or the Red Sox or anybody for that matter. You just can't do it this early because teams start out slow all the time, and look what the Orioles did last year around midseason. They just took off, and I think everybody in the AL East, we talked about it, waiting for what team is going to take off. Well, it was the Orioles last year, so I wouldn't count that team out. Certainly looks different, though, and I think when you look at that starting pitching, when you get to the postseason, you need a lot of special things to happen, and I think that's what the Orioles had last year. They had a lot of very good things happen. It started in the rotation. No real big-name starters, per se, world beaters, but they were all very good. And then, of course, the bullpen, we know, they were just such a well-balanced team. They played tremendous defense, and now, don't forget, this is a team missing J.J. Hardy right now, and when you talk about the middle of the field and how important it is in baseball, I think that's a big guy that when they get him back, I think the whole complexion of that infield and over the field changes. And I think losing Nick Markakis is a big deal. Nick Markakis is a guy that, you know, he's not a perennial all-star by any means, but he is just flat out a good, good baseball player. And, you know, there's a guy that played alongside Adam Jones for several years together. So that's, I think that's a missing piece or a missing part, and I don't think that can be underestimated with the Orioles. But bottom line, don't count those Orioles out. Don't count anybody out. This is a team that maybe they overachieved last year, but we'll find out.
All right, we'll get your the walkway to your condo shoveled up here before you get back after these 10 games. I hope it's not snowing in Cleveland next week for you, for heaven's sake.
You talking snow?
We had snow this morning. Absolutely we had snow. Oh, lots of it.
I'm not sure what he's talking about.
You live above the ground.
and the humidity here is so bad. I think the high is 32 today.
Well, don't let it drown out Jerry's Hawaiian shirt. I know he likes to do that at the Trop from time to time. Thanks for this, Joe. We greatly appreciate it. Have a great call tonight.
My pleasure, boys. Thank you.
Thank you. It might be a Polynesian shirt. I don't want to. Again, I'm not. This isn't. I'm not Adam Sandler. I don't know.
I think you're overestimating Jerry's flamboyant dress. So something I'm just seeing now.
Okay.
I'm sure we'll talk about it as the show goes on, but a report out of the Baltimore Sun, so Eduardo Encina writes for them. He says, not an excuse for sweep, but Orioles left Toronto thinking new Rogers Center turf is a major problem. Too spongy, slow, and lots of untrue hops. I think we would agree with this. Second tweet reads, in fact, there was consideration of Orioles boycotting Tuesday night, especially after Paredes was hurt on a bad hop. O's have contacted Major League Baseball. Now, we know the turf has been a story. It's been a big adjustment. They're saying it's going to speed up, but it's been a little weird to start. Is this something that, hey, listen, everyone's just going to have to adjust to, or are we going to hear a little more of this? Or is this the team that just came in, got their butts handed to them for three games and is whining a little bit?
You do need a team to sweep the Jays and then leave and complain about the turf, then there's no sour grapes. They're just grapes, period. They're not sour. So I don't know. There's a more than enough people thinking that this is problematic. This is a little like I don't know how close you to follow the Women's World Cup dispute, but all these,
not closely at all.
Okay. But let me bring the analogy quick in 30 seconds. All these other countries, the Americans are saying the World Cup's supposed to be played on grass. We're the best. Like, the men are the best. The men would never play on turf. We're not playing on turf. And there was a little lawsuit. It didn't go anywhere. They talked about boycott. That's not going to happen. But guess what the Canadian women did? Nothing. It's their tournament. So, like, the Jays would be interesting because they said, hey, Canadian women, do you think World Cup should be played on grass? We can't say. That was what a little bit was like. I wonder if the Jays are a little like this going, yeah, dude, it's pretty bad, but
or
hey, it's our turf.
If they learn it quicker than anybody else, does that give them a benefit too, right?
It may. Yeah. Lots of Stanley Cup talk. Massive collapse slash comeback in the Lightning Red Wings last night. The Canucks do stay alive. Thoughts on the Sedins and more bigger picture stuff. The Caps bounded the Isles. Preds over the Hawks. We'll let you know where the games are tonight. There is hockey tomorrow at Ricoh Coliseum in Toronto. William Nylander and the Marlies will start their playoff series. We'll talk to the Marlies head coach with a lot of front office moves with the big club being changed. We'll ask Gord Dineen how he approaches this five-game series with the Grand Rapids Griffins. It's Brady and Walker on a Friday. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more Brady and Walker on your TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360. Word will come out from Edmonton, Alberta about Peter Chiarelli, maybe a restructuring the front office. We'll let you know what it is after 3 today. We're going to talk about that amazing Golden State win last night also in just a little bit. And best and worst, it might factor into that. So the Toronto Marlies fought like crazy to get into the postseason. They make it. People forget last year they actually had quite a run and lost to Willie DeJardin and the Texas Stars in the conference final 4-3 in 7 games after sweeping out the Milwaukee Admirals and Chicago Wolves. They had a great run and won their division last year.
There was a point early on this season, the farm team of the Toronto Maple Leafs was 5-12 and something.
Yeah.
And couldn't score. And midway through the year, the playoffs were a distant memory. Now they have like 45 wins to finish the year, which is absolutely incredible. And they open up best of 5 at home Saturday afternoon against Detroit's farm team, Grand Rapids.
Yeah, and Detroit's tapped out some guys. Landon Ferraro's been up. A couple other players have been up. Polkinen's up.
Polkinen's back down now.
Polkinen's back down now?
Right now. As of like right now.
Gord Dineen is the head coach of the Toronto Marlies.
That's bad news for Gord Dineen.
And, yes, we wanted to give him good news. They start tomorrow at the Rico, 3 o'clock and 3 o'clock. They start at home and then 3 potentially in Grand Rapids, but at least 1. Gord, thanks a lot for making the time. Andrew's going tomorrow. I'm going Sunday. We hope it's a great atmosphere. Last year certainly was for you guys in the playoffs. You made it a real home advantage down there.
Yeah, and you know, we're starting off, it's a best of 5, but we're starting the first 2 games at home. So, you know, we really look at our building as an advantage. Our guys really embrace playing in front of our home fans, and it's always a great atmosphere. So, you know, we're planning on feeding off that and carrying over what we've done the second half into the playoffs.
So, thinking about your year and then the year of the parent club, all these changes are made just a couple of weeks ago, and I put myself in your shoes for a little bit that day, and it's human nature, right? Sweeping organizational changes. I'm sure you wondered about, and your staff, about, you know, where does our future lie? Did you feel pressure? And when you guys clinched that playoff berth last week, did it relieve your fears a little bit?
Well, you know, I guess it goes with the territory when we get into our profession that, you know, it's there's always going to be change over time, and certainly when management changes, you know, they have people that they regard highly, but the only influence that we have is in the end is to go out and we're, you know, our first part of our job is to develop players for the Maple Leafs, and we feel like you know, we've prepared guys to the point where hopefully they make that next step next year, and now we've put them in a winning environment, and you know, obviously Brendan Shanahan with his statements after the season regards that very highly as far as guys that want to be in Toronto and that have been through adversity are battle-worn, and I have to say that about our group, that you know, they've been through the battles and they've been battle-tested up to this point, and now we're, you know, in a playoff situation against Grand Rapids, that it's going to be a real test for us. But you know, as a staff, you know, we feel like we put our guys in a position where we can do well, and hopefully that's something that they look at and evaluate us that way.
William Nylander, want to ask about him, Gorda, and his progress. Comes to you after the World Juniors. Stays, went back and then came back. He's your 5th leading scorer, and he only played 37 games. What's he gotten much better at from, say, end of January till now? Here we are, almost end of April.
Well, when you talk about him, you know, he's still a young player. He's 18 years old, you know, for guys like that, it's a matter of gaining confidence, and you know, he's been playing against men over in Sweden, but to now come over and play in a smaller rink, to play against guys that have been professionals for, you know, some of them over 10, 15 years, and you know, it's an adjustment, and it took him a little while, but now he's playing with that confidence and that, I won't call it swagger, you know, he's definitely got respect for the league, but he's relying on his hockey sense and You know, I said it earlier to someone that for me, the mark of a good player is when he makes his teammates better, and he's definitely a guy that that the guys around him certainly excel, and so, you know, that to me is all based on his confidence.
Just quick on that, is a little old school mentality. Maybe a fan thinks, oh, guys are going to take runs at him. They're going to show him it's a men's league. I watched a lot of Sergei Samsonov when he was 17, and the Bruins drafted him. Or sorry, he started in the IHL. Then got drafted up, and he won a Turner Cup that year. But they stuck him on a line. You'd probably remember the name Darren Banks.
Sure.
And so Darren was double the size of him. I mean, you haven't had to do that with William Nylander, and maybe there's just not as much running at younger players and prospects anymore. Maybe there's just a bit more of a code. What would you say about it?
Yeah, Willie's the big guy on his line there. He's playing with Connor Brown and Ryan Rupert. Brian Fraze and Matt Fratton. But he was playing with those two earlier in the year. To me, you know, he's going to face that at whatever level. It's a physical game. There is that factor in the game, and you know, whenever you're a skilled player and somebody that drives a team, you're going to get extra attention, and it's how you respond to it. And you know, he's responded very well to it up to this point. He's a guy that he keeps his head up, and he's a heads up type player. But you know, when people have been able to get their body on him, he's responded, got right back up, and I think having played over here previously, it's probably been a big help for him, and he probably relies on his dad's experiences that way too.
Well, Nylander and Connor Brown, there's a lot to like, and you know, we were at the playoff run last year, and it got pretty fun down at Ricoh, especially with no playoffs for the Leafs. So all the best, and we'll see you this weekend.
I appreciate it, guys. Have a good weekend yourselves.
And so the head coach of the Toronto Marlies, Gord Dineen, yeah, really remarkable second half run to get into the playoffs, and they do so as a 7 seed, and these series go best of 5, but 2-3.
Yeah. How's your bracket looking so far? Because I didn't, this Manchester-Portland series, I looked at it, and I studied it, and I'm worried now Manchester's
I have Hershey going all the way this
year.
You
can't. Yeah, no, they're upset-minded with the Worcester Sharks.
So last night, I mean, there's some early sports. I was at the Jays game last night, but I get home and I watch the Vancouver Canucks stave off elimination. Only time of the year we say stave.
You never use that
time.
That word.
Or
everyone.
Staving off a cold, I guess. They stay alive by beating the Calgary Flames 2-1. So we'll discuss that game coming up. But as soon as that ended, it was overtime. If you flip the channel of the Golden State New Orleans
game.
Yes. Now, leading into the fourth quarter here, the Golden State Warriors trailed game 3 by 20 points. Yeah. Anthony Davis and the Pelicans.
And they got in some trouble in the second quarter with it, too. New Orleans led, they won the first quarter by a point. They were up 11 at the half. And you wonder, is Golden State going to make a bit of a run here? And it's what they do. They didn't. They got outscored 26-17 in the third quarter. So we're at 89-60-69 going into the fourth quarter. And you're up 2-0 in the series. And what we were saying earlier, like what's your motive to just blow your brains out and try and get back in a game like that? Well, they outscore New Orleans 39-19, and if you saw the last sequence, it's remarkable. Steph Curry goes basically takes closer to the side of the key a three, misses, and his foot was actually on the line. Replay showed his foot was on the line. It wouldn't have counted as a three. They would have reviewed it.
Hits the front of the rim, gets kicked back out, and he's falling over in the corner.
He goes back to the corner. The rebound is brought back out, which is remarkable, and he knew to get open. And it's a little like that old joke, like during the Wilt Chamberlain 100-point game, like timeout. Who's covering Wilt? You have to do a better job of staying on. Like, that's about the only thing that could have happened that could have beaten New Orleans is a rebound. You don't get it, that you lose on the offensive glass, and they kick it back out to Curry, and he lobs up this airmail prayer. And that's what he did. And he made the shot. It was amazing. And then they walked over them in overtime.
Amazing they didn't count the 4-point play, to be honest. Looked like he was fouled too. But it is the, the third largest fourth quarter comeback in the history of the NBA playoffs. And this is, you know, again, it's that similar feeling. If the Pelicans win game 3, no one's giving them a chance in this series, but it's a conversation again, right? All of a sudden they're back on the radar. They win that game.
It's impressive.
It's the same with the Raptors and the Wizards tonight. 3-0 is death. People say 2-0 is death. But sports is weird, man. Sports can do weird things to you.
And you'd never, there's never, there's a point last night where Chicago took Derrick Rose out of the game. Milwaukee got their mojo going, got up double digits themselves in the third quarter.
And had two chances to win.
And
too.
Lost in double overtime. Like, I don't know what the odds are. And again, we had a caller earlier say he expects, hey, if you think the Raptors aren't coming back with a win and they're getting swept, that's fine. They've got, if you even call tonight a coin flip, if they lose the coin flip tonight, it's a lot less than a coin flip Sunday. It's just how the NBA goes. But I don't know when the NBA's ever had four series end in four games. I don't think it's happened in a conference. Yeah. And it could. It really could. There's no incentive for Atlanta to let Brooklyn hang around. There's no incentive for Chicago or Cleveland to let their opponents hang around at all. Nothing.
So let me ask you this. You did not, or you either didn't see it or went to bed or flipped away.
No, I was up. I was up. And
but you flipped away.
My wife has gone to D.C. with the Raptors, and I stay up later when I'm not with her. Hey, what's everybody looking at? Don't get suspicious. But she's not boring. I fall asleep sometimes at 10:15. You know that. You're probably like messaging me going, where is he? Where is he? And maybe you're not. And I'm up, but
I'm not.
Last night I had the, you know, you got more things to do when you're on your own in a house with two kids.
But it's a 20-point lead. Like you turn away from that.
I was
sometimes.
Gone from that game, yeah. And then found out it was down to six with about 3 minutes left, and was back there because Vancouver. Yeah, I was split screening Vancouver, Calgary at one point, and Golden State, New Orleans. One goal game after the Canucks got the goal, and very close basketball. I think though that like that has to be one of the 5 or 10. Because it was on the West Coast and so many people in the East didn't see it. Like, you go to bed, there's that weird sensation when you go to bed and you think something is one way and you wake up and it's not. And it's a sporting event. Like, nobody went to bed when the Leafs were up 4-1 on the Bruins.
Because, like, yeah, it's 9 o'clock. Yeah.
Geriatrics may have. But
you're right. I mean, I find that sometimes, once in a while, there's especially NFL out here in the East, it's on so late on a Monday nighter. It was the opener of last or two seasons ago. I went to bed and San Diego had a 20-point lead on the Houston Texans. It was week one of the season. I'm not staying up for this. We had to get up at 4 a.m. doing the morning show.
Yeah.
And I wake up and all of a sudden the narrative changes because San Diego blew it and Houston is 1-0. They started that year 2-0, then finished 2-14.
We would have came in this year week 9. Denver. Remember, New England came way back on Denver, in Denver.
Yes.
And beat them there.
Yes, on a Sunday night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's do best and worst from a huge night in sports last night. We do it now.
Best
Toronto Blue Jays
and worst
Greg Brady
with Brady and Walker.
How on earth would that be? I didn't do anything. I don't know how long I'm going to be here. What happened here?
To be fair, shirt and tie guy. Weird.
I have somewhere to go.
You are the worst. We did get a tweet. Why is Greg's shirt so shiny?
They're complaining more about the
I don't know.
Shirt than
I don't
time.
Have an answer to that. All right, best win, worst loss, best player, worst player from last night in sports. I'll take best win. I'll give it to that aforementioned Golden State Warriors team. Hey, listen, you're down by 20. I don't care who you're playing. It's really hard. 20 in one quarter, and that miracle three by Steph Curry. They're a fun team to watch. They're up 3-0, and you can bank on the sweep now. We'll see what Golden State does in the second round.
Worst loss, Red Wings. Can't be up 2-0. Can't do it. You never trade your best player, and you can't be up 2-0 with 5 minutes left in a game when you can really, really put the hammer down on Tampa, go up 3-1 in the series. Who do you like now? Would it have changed? Obviously, it would have. You're not thinking Tampa's coming back 3-1 down. Some teams do.
It's the weirdest series because Detroit got really outplayed game one and won. They really outplayed Tampa last night and lost. Now it's 2-2. Tampa looked in trouble down 2-0 in that entire series. I'm not sure how Detroit responds now. Worst player, something we're going to talk about a little later on today. So Yordano Ventura of the Kansas City Royals. Boy, you know, we've seen hotheads, right? People call Jose Bautista a hothead or Roger Clemens a hothead or Brett Laurie a hothead. This guy is the hothead of all hotheads. He incites a massive brawl last night against the Chicago White Sox. He's had three starts this year, and there's nearly been a brawl in all of them.
Yeah.
Settle down, guy.
But yet you'll want him to pitch at Rogers Center now. Like, you don't want to miss his start when he comes.
Oh,
you want to see it.
Wildly entertaining.
Philip Forsberg, honorable mention, had 3 goals after being not named one of the Calder nominees. We're going to talk about that, but we'll give it to Pau Gasol, who was triple-double last night. Very good. The Bulls again, could have given up on that game. They're in great place. They haven't had to get on a plane in this series. They're going to win this series in four or five games and be ready for Cleveland. Chicago-Cleveland might be a lot closer than people think. I really do believe that.
All right, it's game three. Raptors-Wizards must win tonight. You tell us whose rent is due tonight. Also, what Brady thinks of the Raptors' game plan tonight.
Sportsnet, 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360.